use the signal pistol. It's all we've got. Pickle's voice was like cracking ice. His face was white and his eyes glittered curiously. I'll try to put you in a position for a shot. If you can hit them, it may set them alight. You might hit a prop. A signal pistol against a machine gun? Even Ginger was experienced enough to know the odds were nearly hopeless. Need we stop and fight? He asked tersely. They've got the legs of us by 10 miles an hour, was the curt reply. Use the pistol. Ginger snatched the large bored pistol from its pocket and thrust a thick cartridge into its breech. There was only one cartridge remaining, and this he pushed into his pocket. I'm going outside, he said tersely. Well, hang on tight. I may have to throw the machine about. Another moment, and Ginger had flung back the emergency trap in the roof and was climbing halfway out. The icy blast of the slipstream smote his face and tore at his body, and he knew that he would not be able to endure the exposure for long without becoming frozen. He looked around and saw the attacking machine on the opposite side of a narrow circle, round which both aircraft were racing. Ginger flinched as he heard a burst of bullets strike the Jupiter somewhere near the tail. In the next few minutes, Biggles twice took the big machine into position for a shot, but each time the tearing slipstream spoiled Ginger's aim. He had only two cartridges and determined to make the most of them. His first chance came when Biggles whirled like lightning and tore straight under the Winkle, so close that Ginger instinctively ducked. He fired straight up. The resultant ball of green fire went slap through the fabric, making a neat hole which did not affect the Winkle's performance. With the tears that the icy blast forced from his eyes freezing on his cheeks, he thrust the last cartridge into the breech. He had to put the pistol into his pocket and hang on with both hands, while Biggles did an Immelmann turn. But he grabbed the weapon again as the Jupiter came out in the position this manoeuvre is designed to effect, on the tail of the opposing machine. Ginger clenched his teeth and, taking deliberate aim, fired. To his dismay, the cartridge misfired. He fired again. Once more, the expected report failed to occur. By this time, the Jupiter was almost immediately above the Winkle and fast overhauling it. Ginger did the only thing left for him to do. He flung the now useless pistol. At the same moment, Biggles dragged the Jupiter away, and Ginger, half dead with cold, slid back into the cabin. Missed, he shouted to Biggles. No more cartridges. But can you put us in that position again? I've just had an idea. Biggles merely nodded. He did not seem in the least perturbed. Ginger staggered back into the main cabin, from where he returned an instant later, carrying a foot-square box, branded with bold black letters, 20-pound corned beef, stow away from engines. Not without difficulty, Ginger dragged this unwieldy weapon up into his recently held position. Biggles had already begun the Immelmann, which starts with a steep climbing turn, so it seemed to Ginger that the world was spinning with a dizzy speed. Raising himself on one knee, he waited while the two machines closed up as though drawn by an invisible magnet. Twice he heard the crack of a bullet boring through the Jupiter. Then, as they swooped low over the Winkle, he flung the heavy box outwards and downwards with all his force. His eyes never left the box, and he followed its course with a morbid fascination. The box struck the Winkle's wing about 4 feet from the tip, causing the whole wingtip to crumple up like tissue paper. For a second or two, the plane zoomed this way and that, and an instant later, the Winkle was spinning earthward. In fascinated horror, Ginger watched it go. He saw the damaged wing balloon and rip off at the roots. He saw the fuselage spin faster and faster, saw the half-breed flung out and go plunging down, clutching vainly at air. The Winkle hit the snow and crumpled into 1,000 fragments. A great pillar of fire leapt heavenwards. White-faced, he fell back weakly into the cabin. Biggles turned an expressionless face towards him. They got what they asked for, he said grimly. Good work, laddie. You'll find some hot coffee in the thermos. You look as if you need it. For some minutes, neither of them spoke. Ginger gulped the hot coffee and began a vigorous massage of his face and hands to restore circulation. He had not expected any great praise from Biggles for what he had done, which didn't mean that Biggles didn't appreciate it. Biggles himself did whatever circumstances demanded. Algy the same. At last, Biggles spoke. We'd better start looking out for Eskimo Island, he observed. But how on earth we're going to tell where it is, I'm dashed if I know. Everything's frozen, and some snow must have fallen too. We can't tell which is land and which is water. So keep a sharp look. Biggles broke off abruptly as the port engine spluttered, picked up and spluttered again. Suddenly it cut out, dead. A horrid suspicion flashed into Ginger's mind. Looking back into the main cabin, his face turned ashen. "It's petrol," he cried. "It's slopping everywhere. The main tank must be holed." Even as he spoke, the second engine died out. A weird silence fell, broken only by the faint whine of the wind over the wings. Biggles flattened out to land, with a feeling that the dead flat white surface looked almost too good to be true. But nothing untoward happened, and the wheels ran through the snow with a gentle hissing sound. Then, very slowly, in the still twilight air, the machine came to rest. For a while, neither of them spoke. Cold was intense. Ginger shivered. "Well," he said, "what do we do next?" "But to tell the truth, laddie, I was just wondering," replied Biggles. "As I see it, we've got two fairly sound chances. The first is that Algy and Wilkes will come to look for us in the Rockheed, and the second is that we shall see or hear something of Angus. We must be somewhere near Eskimo Island." "That's true enough," acknowledged Ginger. "Gosh, it's..." He broke off suddenly, staring at the sky. "Why, look, there's a searchlight," he cried. "Must be Algy. There's another, three, four. Why, there's a dozen. What the dickens is going on?" Biggles laughed. "I should say it's the Aurora Borealis." Ginger nodded. "Oh, of course, the Northern Lights. My goodness. Look how the colours change." "But that isn't the Aurora Borealis," he cried emphatically, pointing in the direction of a distant ridge. "That's yellow lamplight."
"Where?"
"That's funny. It's gone now," said Ginger in a puzzled voice. "You see those two peaks? It seemed to be at the foot of those. I'm absolutely certain."
All right, I'll take your word for it," said Biggles. "If you're right, it could only be Angus. Those peaks must be Eskimo Island. What a stroke of luck."
It took Biggles and Ginger 3 hours of long, hard slog before they reached their objective. Biggles eyed the peaks with disfavour. All around was a land of death, as devoid of life as the earth must once have been. He looked ahead at a tiny object floating feather-like in the still air.
"Snow," he said grimly.
"We'd better find Angus pretty soon, or else." Biggles put his hand into his pocket and took out his automatic. Pointing the muzzle in the air, he fired 3 times at regular intervals. Ginger flinched as the shots crashed out like a salvo of artillery. "Gosh," he murmured in an awestruck voice as the echoes finally rolled away. "If Angus is within 50 miles, he'll hear that." Biggles smiled.
"Yeah, a little hectic, wasn't it?"
They set off again, following the foot of the peaks, pausing from time to time to listen and rest. They had covered perhaps 100 yards this way, with big flakes of snow falling regularly, when Ginger suddenly pulled up short. "There's something moving up ahead," he said quietly.
"Stand fast," came the swift answer. "It's a polar bear. Gosh, what a monster!"
The bear, an enormous shaggy brute that looked grey in the half-light, saw them. Instantly it raised itself on its hind legs and let out a deep, snarling growl. "Look out, it's coming," jerked out Biggles. "Don't run. Wait till it gets close and make every shot count." With his heart hammering against his ribs, Ginger whipped out his automatic and waited as the great beast came on. At a distance of 5 or 6 yards, Biggles fired. But it did nothing to stop the beast's berserk progress. Biggles blazed point blank at the pointed head. Then, in his haste to step aside, he slipped and measured his length in the snow. In a flash, the bear was over him. Ginger's one conscious thought was that he must save Biggles. Hardly knowing what he was doing, he rushed up to the bear. The next instant, a huge, hairy paw caught him a sweeping blow on the shoulder, and he went over backwards. A sickening stench of bear filled his nostrils. A roaring, crashing report almost deafened him. Then a great weight settled on his body, crushing the life out of him. Something seized him by the arm, and he screamed, thinking it was the bear's huge jaws. Then the scene seemed to change, and he found himself on his feet, panting and muttering incoherently.
"Och, now, take it easy,"
said a strange voice in a strong Scots accent. Ginger stared at a short, broad-shouldered figure with a smoking rifle in the crook of its arm. Suddenly he understood. "You're Angus Stirling," he blurted out. It was not far to the old Scotsman's cabin.
"I've got some bad news for you, Angus," Biggles said grimly. "Mose won't be coming back."
"Aye, that means he's dead."
Biggles nodded.
"Quite right. He was murdered."
And he told Angus the whole story, how they heard Mose inquiring for Wilkes and the events that followed. When he had finished, the old man stared at the fire in silence.
"Aye, poor old Mose," he said at last.
"Aye, I know, Blindle. He's bad medicine. It was mighty kind of you to come up here, mister. But here you'll stay, I reckon. And since you're liable to be stopping, I'll tell you something.
Mose was a rich man.
Aye, me and Mose struck it rich."
Biggles looked surprised.
"You mean you found gold?"
"Aye, man. Mose had a tidy poke here. Your power of good it'll do him now. Well, for us, it all depends on the weather."
Angus crossed to the door and flung it open. Outside, it was no longer snowing, and the world lay still and white under a cold blue dome.
"This looks like a chance to bring the grub up from your aeroplane."
"Yeah, it's a bit of luck, the snow holding off like this. If it starts again, your plane will be buried before long. Got to make the most of it."
By the time they arrived at the Jupiter, Ginger had lost all count of time. Not that it really mattered now. In future, the weather would rule their actions and not the clock. Vaguely, he wondered what Algy and Wilkes were doing. But once the snow started again, it would put an end to any idea of rescue. He thought no more about it, but set to work with the others unloading the stores. This done, he was about to suggest to Biggles that they drain off the Jupiter's oil when he heard the distant hum of an aeroplane. The sound was unmistakable, and his heart leapt. "Good old Algy!" he shouted gleefully. "There he is," declared Biggles, pointing at a black speck that had materialized out of the dull haze concealing the southern horizon. "He's seen us," went on Biggles joyfully. "I saw him turn. He's coming." And then his voice died away in a curious manner. Ginger, staring at the fast approaching machine, knew why. It was not Wilkes's Rockheed. It was McBain's second Winkle that was roaring low towards them.
And as they dive for cover yet again, we'll catch up with Biggles and co. to find out what happens next, same time tomorrow. Biggles Flies North by Captain W.E. Johns was read by Michael Palin and abridged by George Hurton. The producer was Marilyn Ireland.